probably don't have to be a guest to think that some things that Christians do are slightly strange. But in the ancient world, there was one thing that made Christians decidedly odd. Let me show you a wall painting. Hopefully the wall painting is going to appear. It's a wall painting that was discovered in the 19th century. And it probably dates from the year 200. And it was found probably, it may well have been done by a child, or possibly it's done in a place of work. But it picks up the fact that what Christians did were decidedly odd. It's actually a picture of a man or a boy on the left. And he's looking up to a man on the cross with a donkey's head. And the inscription written under it is this: Alexamenos worships his God. It's mockery, isn't it? It's clearly, in the ancient world, just people mocking the fact that Christians would worship somebody who dies on a cross. It's crazy to people. You know, you worship gods who are strong, gods who are powerful. The idea that you would worship somebody who dies on a cross is seen to be utterly ridiculous, because gods were to be strong and powerful. Crucifixion, by contrast, that was a barbaric way that the Romans used to kill criminals, where people were left naked, left for hours to die of suffocation. And surely you think, what happens there? That can't happen to a god. That's regarded as ridiculous. And I have to say, you don't find this anywhere else. I know it's common to say that all religions are basically the same, but no other religion has anything resembling the cross. No other religion has as its center point a god who dies in that way. And yet I have to say, I am convinced that happened. Jesus of Nazareth gives many convincing proofs that he was God come down to earth. His miracles, the power of his teaching, they're claims that can be checked out. But perhaps the strangest thing about Jesus is this: he deliberately sets out to die. He chooses to go to the cross. He says all the way through his life, I am going to die. He sets out for Jerusalem knowing that people are going to kill him. He's silent during his trial. He doesn't speak in his defense. He doesn't plead for his life. All of which is slightly strange for a man who possesses such wisdom. It would be crazy for a man who is wise to set out to die unless that is the whole point. Unless the goal of his mission is to die on a cross. So people in the ancient world thought it strange, but Jesus seems to have made it his goal to die on a cross. And the question I want to pose this evening is, what does that tell us about God? A while back I was reading about a chaplain down at one of the colleges, Worcester College, a few years ago. And he would often ask this question as students arrive. He'd ask, does God interest you? And the response would often be something like this: well, not really. And he'd ask, you know, why not? Why doesn't God interest you? And the response would often be like this: well, if there is a God, well, he just feels remote, distant, uncaring. You just can't know him. And the chaplain said, well, frankly, I'm not sure I would be interested in that sort of God. But there's a different God. There's a real God. One who's not distant and remote. One who comes close. One who cares. And he'd tell them the story of Jesus, introduce them to a completely different God from the one they didn't believe in him. And that's what I want to do this evening, really to present to us a different sort of God. Not the God we're tempted to ignore, not the God who's up there somewhere, some shadowy figure in the clouds, but the real God who reveals himself on a cross. So what does the cross show us about the real God? Just three things I want to say tonight, and it's fairly scattergun. All of the points I make could be developed further, and hopefully there'll be a discussion starter that you can ask others about as the evening goes on. But here's the first thing the cross teaches us about a God. We find a God who knows about suffering. A God who knows about suffering. I guess for many people in the world, when it comes to the big questions about God, suffering is the main issue. It might be a particular suffering that we've been through, or just the suffering in the world. And there's the question, why does God allow it to happen? It might be that's a question deep down for us. And can I say, I understand that question. It's a question I ask at times. God, why do you let that happen? And though as Christians we can give pointers, and maybe on another evening we'll do that, it's not a question that we can answer perfectly. We can't explain why every individual example of suffering takes place. But I do want to say that the cross helps. Because the Christian can say God is not uncaring and he is not remote. God knows what suffering is like. The cross is marked by pain, by loneliness, by shame, by death. God knows what suffering is like. This one may well pain some of us. Regulars will remember Linda, who died 4 years ago in a car crash one evening. And I remember just how shocked we were as a church. And I remember thinking, how do I preach next Sunday? And it just so happens that we were working through the prophet Isaiah at the time, the Old Testament book written several centuries before Jesus. And actually the next passage we were due to study was a graphic description of the cross, of the one who was pierced for our transgressions, crushed for our iniquities, describing the one who was led like a lamb to the slaughter. Just in passing, actually, the fact that that was written several centuries before Jesus seems to me one reason to believe the cross wasn't an accident of history, but was part of God's plan. But I have to admit, on that morning, it wasn't particularly those words that I've read that struck me, but these. He was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows and familiar with suffering. Here we were, we'd experienced suffering, but we were coming together to worship a God who came to earth, one who was familiar with suffering himself. We couldn't say he didn't know what it was like. And again, I want to say that no other religious system has that. No other religion has a God who has experienced suffering firsthand. Edward Shillitoe lived during the First World War, and he wrote a poem speaking of the pain of it. In it, he says, "Our wounds are hurting us. We know today what wounds are," he writes. But he closes with a stanza speaking of the Lord Jesus. "The other gods were strong, but thou wast weak. They rode, but thou didst stumble to a throne. But to our wounds, only God's wounds can speak. And not a god has wounds, but thou alone." Of all the gods around, only our God knows what it is to be wounded, is familiar with suffering. John Stott, a prominent Christian in the last century, said this, "I could never myself believe in God if it were not for the cross. The only God I believe in is the one Nietzsche ridiculed as God on the cross. In the real world of pain, how could one worship a God who was immune to it? I've entered many Buddhist temples in different Asian countries and stood respectfully before the statue of the Buddha, his legs crossed, arms folded, eyes closed, the ghost of a smile playing round his mouth, a remote look in his face, detached from the agonies of the world. But each time after a while, I've had to turn away, and in imagination I've turned to that lonely, twisted, tortured figure on the cross, nails through hands and feet, back lacerated, limbs wrenched, brow bleeding from thorn pricks, mouth dry and intolerably thirsty, plunged in God-forsaken darkness. That is the God for me." One of the things I know sometimes happens when we're in the midst of suffering is we do ask that question, "God, why? Why have you allowed this to happen?" We worship a God who says, "I know how you feel." Because I've asked that question as well. My God, why? We can worship a God who is familiar with suffering. That's what the cross points us to. Then secondly, I want to say that the cross means we have a God who is committed to justice. A God who's committed to justice. You know, why is it that Jesus went to the cross? Was it simply to show that he's familiar with suffering? The Apostle Paul, one of Jesus' earliest followers, wrote a letter to Christians in Rome. And he says in that letter that the cross demonstrates two things about God. And the first thing he says is that the cross demonstrates God's righteousness or God's justice. That's to say, God is committed to doing the right thing, which includes evil being punished. That was what was happening at the cross. Sin, evil, wrongdoing, ingratitude was being punished. I don't know if you notice within the human race, the desire for justice runs pretty deep. I've been conscious of it with all the issues surrounding Jimmy Savile. And just the outrage that is felt across the country that in this life at least, he escapes justice. I think recently there have been three incidents where somebody has been committed of sexual offences and they've either been given a short prison sentence or no prison sentence and people have protested with the result that it's gone to the Court of Appeal and a longer sentence has been applied. And there's something deep within humanity that says where evil is committed, it must be punished. It is wrong when it is just let go. There has to be punishment for evil. We want that sort of justice. I think the difficulty for us is this. It's quite easy to get animated about cases like that. And rightly, in many ways, it's right to get animated. But the problem for us is that God has a different definition of evil. To be sure, he sees those things that I've talked about already as evil. But there are other things as well. Think about this for a moment. What do you make of somebody living in a world that God has made, enjoying all the things that God has given, and yet ignoring him and disobeying him? That's what human beings tend to do, to live in the world that God has made, enjoy all the good things God has given, and yet not thank God or follow God. The thing is, God sees that as evil as well. And because God is God of justice, that evil must be punished. You see, the problem is often we think other people do evil and they must be punished, but well, not us. We're nice kind of people. But God doesn't show that kind of favoritism. He sees all evil as wrongdoing that must be punished if he is to show his character as righteous and just. And Jesus says that is what is happening at the cross. Shortly before he dies, Jesus speaks about his death as drinking God's cup. And in the Bible, in the Old Testament, the cup symbolized God's anger at sin, at evil, at wrongdoing. And at the cross, God is punishing sin. He is dealing with wrongdoing because he is a God who is righteous, a God who is just. I'm glad that there's that kind of God in control of the universe. It would actually be a terrible thing if the God who was in control of the evil of the universe thought our lives didn't matter and evil didn't matter. The kind of God who would say to someone like Hitler, oh yeah, come in, it's fine. It'd be terrible if that kind of God was in control of the universe. But he's not. The cross tells us that God is a just God who takes what we do in this life and takes our evil seriously. But that still leaves a question, doesn't it? How does it work? After all, Jesus lived a good life. So why is he being punished? If the cross is about the punishment of evil, why is Jesus being punished? What's going on there? Well, I want to say that the third thing that the cross demonstrates is that God is full of love. God is full of love. I mentioned that first phrase that the Apostle Paul used when he was speaking about the cross, saying that the cross demonstrates God's justice and God's righteousness. Or the second thing is simply this. Paul says God demonstrates his love on the cross. You see, Jesus' death on the cross must have achieved something. You see, he predicted he was going to die. There was clearly a point, clearly a purpose to his death. But what good does simply somebody dying do? You know, imagine walking along a cliff and somebody runs up to you and says, I'm going to die for you, I love you and I'm going to die for you, and they plunge off the cliff. Frankly, that's weird. That's not loving. You think that's mad, that's crazy. How does somebody plunging to their death show that they love me? It only actually works if the cross achieves something. consider a different scenario, and forgive me, I've tried to work on this all day and it's still a rubbish scenario, but imagine this scenario. You're walking along the cliff, you stumble and you fall because you're clumsy, and you're beginning to fall towards the cliff edge. Somebody else comes, pushes you back, but in the process falls over the cliff to their death. And then you think, wow, that's something. Yeah, that's love. Because actually that death saved me and rescued me. And that's the cross. You see, consider for a moment the last point. Part of God's character is that he must deal with sin. It must be punished because sin is serious and eternal punishment is deserved. But imagine him seeing us and he knows our sin must be punished, but he loves us. He loves the people he has made. What does he do? Well, both the Father and the Son agree that the Lord Jesus will stand in our place to be our substitute. He could be our substitute. He could pay for our sin because he had no sin of his own to pay for. What the Christian says is, I should have died, but he died in my place. It was what Isaiah said all those years ago. He was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. He took the punishment that my sins deserved. He stood in my place so that I might not face God's justice. He was my substitute. And that is love. The incredible thing is this. Jesus doesn't wait for us to be good before he does it. The verse that I mentioned about the cross demonstrating God's love goes like this. God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. He doesn't wait for us to sort ourselves out. He comes and dies whilst we are still ignoring him. And that is love. Love for people who don't deserve it. Might be that your issue this evening is this. You wonder whether you could ever be good enough for God. The cross says you don't have to be. He loved you while you were ignoring him. He loved us while we were still sinners, dying in our place so that we might not face the anger of God. Just think for a moment of Jesus heading to Jerusalem, knowing that he was going to face agony there, but going anyway. And that's love. Think of God the Father willingly giving up his Son so that he might not have to judge us. That's love. I guess down the years, people have tried to sum it up. Paul said this, the Son of God, he loved me, and he gave himself for me. Or think of how hymn writers have expressed it. Amazing love. How can it be that you, my God, should die for me? And you kind of get that sense, it's just utterly astonishing. As I think about God and I think about me, it is amazing love that God would choose to die for me. Or my song is Love Unknown. Oh, who am I that for my sake my Lord should take on flesh and die? Who am I that God should decide to come as a man and die for me? God demonstrates his love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Some gods really aren't worth getting out of bed for. God who is remote, distant, uncaring, maybe started the world and then disappeared. Yeah, it's hard to get excited about a God like that. But what about a God who's willing to enter a world full of suffering? What about a God who is so pure that he can't just brush evil under the carpet? What about a God who loves us so much that he's willing to hang on a cross for us? I think that's a God worth living the whole of your life for. That's the real God. God's certainly worth bothering about. God worth living the whole of life for. A suffering, just, loving God, who also happens to be the real God who's really there. God worth living the whole of our lives for. We're going to hear now a little bit from three people, and Ian's going to chair this.